This is Guildcast, episode 10, for January 14th, 2006. Welcome back to Guildcast, everyone. I'm your host, Sean, and there have been a lot of developments lately in regards to Chapter 2, Factions. So that's just about what this episode is going to be all about. And as you may or may not be able to tell, I got a new microphone, so hopefully the sound quality of these podcasts will be a little bit better. And as far as the theme song, I had the poll up since last week, and it looks like people voted to keep the current song, but it was a pretty close race in all. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to keep the current song, but then occasionally I'm going to play a couple of the other songs in that poll, kind of mix it up a little bit. So that should be all right. And as far as the next poll I'm going to put up there, it'll be which part of Chapter 2 are you most excited about? So you'll be able to go to the website, guildcast.com, and vote on which part of Chapter 2 you're most excited about in as far as the news that you've heard so far. Now, I wanted to say hi to a few of the people I've talked to in the game. There's actually been quite a bit this time. There's been Jillum Lehan, some kind of monster, Warden Chabra, Planetar Warrior, Controller of Minds, Neswada Gwyn, Chief Dar, Seraphin Lightspell, The Chieftain, PvP Aragorn, Tom Oak, Swift Shootin, Master Zodos, and Zarman Firebred. Thanks to all of you for saying hi to me in the game. Now, last Tuesday, I had a trivia contest that I did that I announced on the last episode. Now, it was the first one I did, so it was a bit rough, and I actually found a lot of things that I could have changed about it. But it was good because it was, you know, I got to iron out some of the details and everything, certain issues that I didn't even think about, such as when I first got there, a few people invited themselves. When I clicked accept, it made me join their party. So what I'm going to have to do in a situation like that next time is when I see people start inviting me, I'm going to have to look for their name and invite, I'll have to invite them first. And then after that, I can start accepting the invitations. So that was just a minor little snag there. But the contest went fairly well. There weren't a lot of players, which from what I've been told was mainly because I announced it 2 days before the contest. And I didn't realize that a lot of people don't really listen to the podcast right away, right as soon as I put it out. And I know I'm the exact same way. I listen to a lot of podcasts. There's several times when I have a queue of podcasts that are new that have come out, and I haven't listened to them all. So, and it may take a week to listen to, you know, to certain ones. So what I'm going to do this time is I'm going to make it a little bit further away, and I'll announce that in a minute when the next contest will be. Just to give plenty of time for people to hear the podcast and know about it. Now, as far as the players in the contest, there was the Shadowed Blade, Chief Dar, Cygnus Zero, Dan Flick, and Thomas the Pure. Now, the Shadowed Blade, he won first place both times in the 9 p.m. and 10 p.m. contest, and Dan Flick actually won second place both times. So, congratulations to those two. The Shadowed Blade got 2 gold items from the prize page each time he won, so he got a total of 4. And then Dan Flick got 2 items, 1 for each time he won second place. So congratulations to them. Let me just read off some of the items that they won, just as an example, so that people will know. If you haven't checked out the prize page on the website, the things that Shadowed Blade won were Gold Zealous Composite Bow of Defense, Flint's Flesh Cleaver, a Gold Zealous Half Moon of Warding, and a gold fire wand. And the 2 things that Dan Flick won were the gold fiery war axe and the gold ghostly staff of warding. I've added a ton more prizes on the website for this next contest. So go ahead and check that out, guildcast.com. On the left there's a link for the contest prizes. And what I hope to do is each time I do a new contest, I hope to have better and better prizes each time. But there's some pretty good prizes this time. So it should be fairly interesting. Also, I wanted to read a few of the questions that I asked those guys so that just to kind of give an idea of what it was that they had to answer in order to get these questions. And I'll admit some of them were pretty hard. I asked 20 questions in all, and I believe there was about 4 or 5 of them that no one even knew the answer to at all. So that pretty much told me that some of these are, you know, might be a little too hard. So I got to see what exactly I'll need to change for next time. But some of the questions included, what does the Hail Staff mod add for your character? And of course that's health. I believe everybody got that one right. One that the Shadowed Blade got right that I was actually kind of surprised that anyone got was, after you finish the character creation process, a movie plays introducing you to the game. The first four words spoken in that movie are also the name of a quest found after beating all of the mission cities in the game. Name that four-word phrase. And, of course, that is The Last Day Dawns, which is a Titans quest, and it's the first four words of the introduction movie after you, you know, first create your character. Some other questions. What is Henchman Orion's last name? And that is Elek. And I believe the Shadow Blade got that one right. What is the name of Old Mac? What is the name of Old Mac's pet devourer? And that, of course, is Joe. Let's see. Some other ones I asked were, what is the name of the powerful religious order that rules over Krita? Of course, being the White Mantle. So that just gives you an example of a few of the questions that I asked. And, of course, I won't ask these questions again on the next trivia contest, but it's just to kind of give you an idea of what you'd be dealing with. So let me announce this next week's contest. It's going to be a running contest, and it's going to be from Temple of Ages to Druid's Overlook. It's a pretty far run. There's four zones included in this run. So this is how I'm going to score it. The first, second, and third leg of this run, the winner will get 5 points for each zone, and anyone still alive will get 2 points. Anyone who dies in the zone will not get a point. Then the final zone, where you actually enter Druid's Overlook, the winner will get 8 points, and those still alive will get 2 points each, and the dead will receive nothing. So basically, it's still possible to lose a leg of the race and still win the contest overall. Now, as far as meeting me, it'll be pretty much the same. Just meet me in Temple of Ages, and this is going to be at 8 p.m. Eastern on Thursday, January 19th. 8 p.m. Eastern is also 1 a.m. Greenwich Mean Time. This time, instead of being District 2, I'm going to have it in District 5, only because we discovered when on the last contest, District 2 was pretty full, and somebody said that they had some problems getting in, because at the time, it was in the American District 2, and at the time, America had favor, so it was kind of hard for people to get in. So this time, it'll be American District 5, Thursday, January 19th, at 8 p.m. Eastern, 1 a.m. Greenwich Mean Time. The other rules will be the same. The first 7 people who invite themselves will be the participants in the race. And the complete rules I'll have up on the website under the contest rules section. But I just want to mention these general rules right now. And what will happen is we'll all get set up outside of Temple of Ages. And I will actually just say go. I'll say ready, set, go. I was going to originally have it to where I die first. But when I did some play testing for this, I ran out, stood in front of the enemies for them to kill me. And it took a little while at first, and then people in the party were starting to kind of run forward a little bit, and it was taking a while, you know, so they were getting a little antsy. So I think it would be more fair for me to kind of, what I'm going to do is I'm going to draw a line on the compass. And this, you know, everybody's got to stay behind that line, and then I'm going to say ready, set, go. Everybody takes off. Then what I'm going to do is, while you're running, I'm going to go die so that I can observe, you know, who's going to be the winner. But like I said, the complete rules are going to be up on the website, so go ahead and check that out. I'm going to put those rules up today so that there will be no question. I know last time when I announced it on Sunday, I didn't complete all the rules until Monday. So actually the rules weren't even up until the day before the contest. And that was pretty much bad planning on my part. Now I wanted to go over some email questions that I've gotten lately. First one being from Ryan in New Jersey. He asks, can you explain the difference between gold, purple, and blue weapons? Which ones are the best? Thanks, Ryan. Well, as far as being the best, that doesn't really have a lot to do with color. The order of color, as far as rarity, is white, then blue, then purple, then gold, then green. White weapons can be max. You can find a max damage weapon that's white. It just won't have any mods on it. And as far as blue, you can find some really good blue weapons, especially from the collectors. Like out in the Crystal Desert, you can find some really high-quality weapons, and they're blue. So that, again, isn't really a judge of how good it is or which ones are the best. Then purple is the next step up. There's a lot of good purple weapons out there, and gold is usually pretty rare, and it even says, like, when one drops, it'll say a rare Chaos Axe or whatever. That means that it's gold. And in my opinion, I've seen some gold weapons that are far superior to anything else. Now, the green weapons, those are only found in Sorrow's Furnace. Well, mostly only found in Sorrow's Furnace. And you can only get them from certain bosses that the items are named after. And the only bad thing about green items is that you can't add modifications to them at all. So in that regard, I would almost consider gold weapons better because you can customize them to be exactly what you need for your certain build. So basically, in a nutshell, it goes white, blue, purple, gold, green. But the colors aren't really based on quality as much as rarity. And another email I got, actually I've gotten this email from tons of people. It's in regards to Thunderhead Keep. A lot of people have been asking me, what's the secret to beating Thunderhead Keep? How do you beat Thunderhead Keep? Well, in my opinion, it's all in the group. You got to have excellent communication in your group. Like I talked about a few episodes ago with the pickup groups and communication within the group. This is a prime example of why that's so important. You can have one or two people in your group that can mess it up for everyone. So the best bet for beating Thunderhead Keep, I've found, is get in a good guild and do it with them. Because it's rarely possible to get a pickup group to do Thunderhead Keep successfully, in my experiences. Now, I'm not saying that can't happen, because it certainly can, and I've done it before. But if everyone's asking me the best way, I would say that's the best way. Now, what I'm going to do, I think one of these episodes I'll probably have a whole segment on how to beat Thunderhead Keep, or maybe the best possible plan for beating Thunderhead Keep. Now, I'm not an expert on it, but I've done it maybe about a dozen times between getting my characters through there or helping guildies and helping friends. And I'm just going to, one of these episodes, I'm just going to kind of go over what I've found to be the best experiences. Now, on to the Guild Wars updates. There was an update on January 13th, Friday the 13th, and it introduced some new elements of the game that we will see in Chapter 2. And this is a little quote from Commander Kuru of the Zacian Order regarding the changes that you see in the game now. He says, "Please do not be alarmed. Though the strange occurrences you are witnessing outside of the Tomb of the Primeval Kings have not as of yet been fully explained, we, the Zacian Order, are here to provide for your safety. Be advised, those who dare approach the entrance to the tombs in the coming days risk great peril. You would do well to leave this matter to the trained Zacian experts who are already hard at work. We will not interfere with your comings and goings if you do not interfere with ours. As a service of Balthazar, you have been notified." And what he's talking about is you can notice that the Tomb of the Primeval Kings has been changed a bit. It's a little gloomier. Looks like the tombs are falling apart a little bit. And this is all in preparation for when all of the arenas kind of go away and are made as one on the battle aisles. So what I'm thinking is these places are falling apart and they're going to be rebuilt on the battle aisles, or at least reappear on the battle aisles. So in places such as the Tomb of the Primeval Kings and the other competition arenas, you'll notice the new henchmen. There's a Zacian Archer, Zacian Mage, Zacian Healer, and Zacian Fighter. And then there are Acolytes that tell a little bit more about what's to come and what you can look forward to. But I have pictures on the website. I'm going to put up some pictures of each of the new henchmen, some pictures that I took in the game. And what's kind of funny about these new henchmen is if you look, such as in Tomb of the Primeval Kings, you look over to the campfire and you'll see the old henchmen standing there. And if you watch and listen, you'll see that they're kind of bickering about what these new henchies are doing and how they're stealing their jobs. Kind of funny. And a lot of the new cities like Lion's Arch and Amnoon Oasis have these acolytes, like I mentioned, that talk more about what's to come. But you'll notice that when you enter these cities for the first time, if you haven't already, there's a quite a big download. Some of them are up to 4 megabytes download. And I would imagine that this is not all just from the acolytes being there, but it's also like in a recent interview, Jeff Strain, the founder of ArenaNet, said that what they do is they'll regularly implement new features, but they don't activate them right away, so that there's no giant download all at once. So I'm sure this just means that they're starting to put those pieces together in these cities for these changes, but they just haven't activated them yet. And another speculation of mine is, right now you'll notice that all of the new NPCs are focused on Balthazar. And what I'm wondering is if during the week or during the time up until chapter 2, they will represent the other gods, such as Melandru, Lyssa, Duena, Grenth. So I'd be really curious to find out about that. And another piece of this January 13th update is the announcement of the All Free-for-All PvP Weekend event, which will be taking place from January 20th, starting at midnight Pacific Time, 8 a.m. Greenwich Mean Time, and closing January 23rd, 7:59 a.m. Greenwich Mean Time. And during this weekend, you'll be able to see some new parts of Chapter 2, such as the two new professions, the Assassin and the Ritualist. And I'm just going to go over some key points of what they say in their little Q&A on the website. But if you want to check it out, go to guildwars.com, and right on the front page they have all of this new information, so you can check it out for yourself. But some key points I want to go over. They started giving out the keys on Friday, January 13th, during the afternoon sometime. The existing Guild Wars players do not need to acquire a key. They will obtain access to the Guild Wars faction's global free-for-all PvP weekend at the time that it launches. Players may want to pay close attention in the game world in the days preceding the event. Things are changing in many interesting ways, as I just went over a little bit. You will also start with a limited number of skills for the profession that you choose, and you will be able to acquire more skills through the unlocking process based on the gain of faction during PvP gameplay. You are also welcome to use one of the global access keys to create a second account if you wish. You will keep the assassin and ritualist skills that you unlock during the event. They will remain in your skill list, but they will be inactive until you acquire the retail version of Guild Wars factions. On the other hand, the things you acquire on your normal retail account, faction points, fame, increases in rank, Guild Wars ladder ratings, they will remain on your account. And the account that you use for the event could be converted into a regular retail account with the purchase of Guild Wars factions. The account also may be used for subsequent events, as long as you acquire the key that pertains to any future event. So check out that in its entirety at guildwars.com. They go over a few other things. And plus also, they announced a little bit about the Guild Wars World Championship that's actually going on right now. In Korea, they've had their finals already, and War Machine has won that. But Europe's and America's are still going on. Actually, I believe Europe's is going on as I speak right now. So by the time this comes out, there should be a winner for Europe. But I'll talk more about that next week. And there's been another Guild Wars interview on GameSpy at GameSpy.com. I'll have the link up on my website. And again, I'm going to just kind of read some key points of that interview instead of the whole thing. It's two pages. They have some really great pictures on there. They have a picture of the assassin and a picture of the ritualist, which is a really intriguing picture, and I cannot wait to make myself a ritualist. But here's some excerpts from that GameSpy interview. Factions is a standalone expansion for Guild Wars, Jeff Strain says. Players will be able to purchase factions and have a lot of fun with it without having to purchase the original game. Of course, those players who do have both will have the benefit of being able to cross back and forth between them, bringing items and abilities across, and having access to much more content. Strain uses the card game Magic the Gathering as a metaphor for the way ArenaNet sees the development of the Guild Wars franchise. Magic the Gathering keeps reinventing itself with each new edition, and players are never forced to buy older cards to stay competitive. They can always enjoy a one-edition game. Factions will do that for Guild Wars. What factions-only players will miss out on is some of the richness that comes from mixing different editions together. The main conflict of factions is the result of the hatred between the other two nations of the continent. The Kurziks are the ultra-conservative and highly religious culture whose socially frozen society worships the status quo. In fact, the world of the Kurziks is a mirror of the petrified forest in which they carve their beautiful homes. The Lexans, on the other hand, are a wild nation of seafaring nomads who have traded in their ships for magical walking machines that traverse the Jade Ocean. As a group, the Lexans are a walking advertisement for the Darwinian social order. Only the strong survive. The only thing on which the Lexans and Kurziks agree is that their war will continue until one or the other is exterminated. The Luxan-Kurzik conflict is also the driver of the major new gameplay dynamic of factions, territorial conquest. Strain can barely keep his voice from shaking with excitement as he describes factions' new metagame. The main goal of players and factions is going to be deciding which faction to align with. Once faction releases, guilds will be able to join together in alliances. These alliances will share a chat channel and be able to visit each other's guild halls. More importantly, alliances will have access to a real-time map of the struggle between Lexan and Kurzik. By participating in alliance missions and faction battles, players can take control of cities and towns and actually move the two nations' control zones. This is going to be big, Strain says. Imagine being able to take control of a whole city, trigger special events, get access to exclusive areas, and work with allies to coordinate a huge global strategy to take over the world. Strain didn't want to say what the rewards would be for taking over the world, or how the game would handle that, if and when it happened. He did say the team had some pretty cool ideas about it, though. You won't see many gently rolling hills in factions. We want players to be fighting the environment as much as they're fighting each other. Some of the new battlefields players will be fighting on include the rooftops of a densely packed city, huge temples built on the back of giant tortoises, tunnels carved in the Jade Sea, and the elaborate hollows of the Petrified Forest. We also want players to compete in more ways than just killing each other, he says. He then provided an example of an alliance mission in which teams can't fight each other, but must instead compete to hold resource points for a fixed time and cut off each other's supply lines. Finally, no MMO expansion would be complete without a few new classes to deal out the damage. According to Strain, the launch of factions will mark a shift in class philosophy. The original six classes will now be referred to as core classes and will be present in factions and all future retail releases. Each release will also sport two new professions only available to players who own these expansions, although those characters will be able to cross into any area of the game once created. Factions' new professions are the Assassin and the Ritualist. The core professions kind of represent the classical fantasy archetypes, Strain says. What each of these new professions will do is expand the gameplay possibilities. The Assassin, for example, brings in dual-wielding, teleportation, and stealth abilities. The Ritualist is a spirit summoner who uses lots of minions to attack, heal, defend, buff players, or power up spells. Both classes will dramatically alter the strategies needed to win on the battlefield. As our conversation drew to a close, I brought up the question of game balance. How will ArenaNet manage to introduce two new professions and hundreds of new items and abilities and still manage to keep the game balanced? At the risk of not being humble, we've gotten pretty good at this, he says. We've tracked every battle that's taken place in the game and have loads of statistical evidence to avoid killer combos. We're constantly tweaking the balance to make sure it stays that way. And what of the danger that this new expansion will siphon players away from the core game? Strain chuckles. Once everyone gets over the new stuff feeling, it should balance out and players will be able to participate in whichever experience they feel like when they log on. Isn't that the major reason to make each release very different? We want to give our players the richest online experience imaginable. So there you have it. I think it's a pretty good interview. It told us quite a bit of new information about Chapter 2, what we can look forward to. And another interview, actually, is on another podcast, and I recommend you guys check it out. It's at gamersteve.com. I'm going to have a link to it on my website. But it's an audio interview with Jeff Strain, where he talks a little bit more about some of the things that I just talked about. But it's another audio interview that I thought might be pretty interesting for you all. So it looks like we're all going to be pretty busy in the next few weeks. And it looks like ArenaNet is doing a pretty good job of keeping us interested in this new chapter. And I'm also pretty excited about being able to report on it each week. But until next time, I thank you all for listening. Tune in next week and tell your friends, tell your guildmates about guildcast.com.